are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
That begs the question, who would you rather have for next season, Cody Bellinger or Scooter Gennett?
It's not even close. Scooter Gennett by a landslide.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I love Barrios, right? Or Barrios, whatever way. I know Barrios. I love how you put a little Barrios. Latin flair to it, Matt. So, yeah.
I'm a Latino. I'm a Latino at heart.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, you can reach me on the Cody Bellinger fan club page.
Oh, Cody Bellinger. I love you, Cody Bellinger.
No, whatever.
Oh, God.
I am hot as fuck.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I am hot as fuck.
Like, it's actually cool here.
Yeah.
Sitting here with my windows open in the summertime in Illinois for once.
Today is the coolest day it's been in the last week here in Northern California, and it is 96 degrees. Right now it's like 92 at almost 8 o'clock at night.
I have a feeling our guest doesn't feel bad for you.
No, I have a feeling our guest doesn't. Mike, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. Cody Bellinger just hit his 20th bomb of the year. Scooter Gennett hit a 2-run home run against the Rays tonight. I guess Justin Smoke homered again off of his former team as well against Texas. So I mean, all is right in the world. It's all good.
That begs the question, who would you rather have for next season, Cody Bellinger or Scooter Gennett?
It's not even close. Scooter Gennett, yeah, by a landslide.
Obviously. That's why you're the best in the business, my friend. Joining us today is a special guest. It is Keith Farnsworth of the Fantasy Front Office Podcast. Keith, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm melting myself over here in Arizona.
Yeah. How hot is it there?
I think it was 115 a couple hours ago. Expected to be 120 tomorrow.
But, like, that's not real, right? Is that, like, an exaggeration?
It's actually, it was 115 today, expected to be 120 tomorrow.
Can you
not even go outside, basically?
You shouldn't. It's probably cooler inside your oven right now than it is outside.
Alternative facts.
Global warming is real.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely atrocious, you know? I mean, that's literally hell to me. But Keith, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, tell people where they can reach you on social media and kind of what you guys do over at the Fantasy Front Office Podcast.
All right. So you can catch me out at fantasy_Keith or check out my writings at fanfrontofficepodcast.com. There's a couple of us writing over there. We do a weekly podcast. We cover, you know, anything from prospects to redraft leagues, to dynasty leagues. We do a weekly show, usually post on Wednesday or Thursday, and just have a good time talking baseball.
Nice. Definitely go check him out. We had your boy Philip Evans on not too long ago, and we had a blast with him. So hoping to have the same here happen tonight. So let's get started. Let's talk about Lorenzo Cain, who's been absolutely on fire. Lorenzo Cain has been a popular kind of breakout pick the last couple seasons. Hasn't necessarily put it all together. Keith, what are your thoughts on Lorenzo Cain for the rest of the season?
Well, surprisingly, he's one of only a few players that have double-digit home runs and steals, which I didn't really realize he had that many steals until I looked it up. But the pace that he's on is a better pace than he's had in his career. In fact, I think it was 2014, 2015, he was in the MVP running, and his numbers so far this year are going to eclipse what, you know, his numbers were that season. So that kind of speaks to how good he started off.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Lorenzo Cain?
You got to love what he's doing, man. He had a little, you know, he had injuries last year, had a breakout 2015, had the wrist injuries, kind of sapped all the power. He only hit 9 home runs last year. He's already got 10 this year. He's bringing you 2015 value right now with the power numbers are right back to that level. He's giving more home runs. Sacrificing a little bit of doubles for more homers, but the power numbers are staying roughly the same. Just, you know, make that little swap. But like he said, 10 home runs, 14 steals, 284, 362, 468 is a hell of a line. And he's comfortably in the top 15 solidly and in the player rater for outfielders in ESPN, probably depending on your format. I know ESPN kind of overvalues steals, so it might not be that valuable. But, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up with the rest of the season, especially if he gets traded. I'm not sure if he would. I don't really see Kansas City making all these guys available. I think they'll probably end up just taking the draft picks for him and kind of riding it out. But Lorenzo Cain is a hell of a player, and I just kind of wonder if he gets traded, if he goes, it'll be somewhere better. So it's kind of exciting.
Mike, I know you said prior to the podcast you don't think that the Royals are selling either. So what is Cain's value rest of the season for you?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to be selling because they probably think they have a chance to compete, at least in the way that the American League is shaking out right now. I am a believer in Kane. I liked him before the season started. And it was weird, right? Because last year, I didn't like Kane at all. I didn't draft him anywhere. His value was terrible. And then all of a sudden, coming into this season, he was pick 133. He was coming at a really good price. And all the way up until June started, he really wasn't having a great season. Then all of a sudden this month, he has a 365 average, 8 home runs. And we're all of a sudden talking about him as a top 50 player on the ESPN player rater. I think he's going to be great the rest of the season, barring health. And if he can stay healthy, he's probably going to be a 20-30 guy. And that's somebody that you can play anywhere. He's already top 10 in stolen bases in all of the major leagues. And it, with stolen base being a premium right now in fantasy, I think he's worth holding on to the rest of the way. And some people would probably say sell high, but I think you should ride it out the rest of the way because I think he will stay consistent.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a big believer in Lorenzo Cain for the last couple years. Keith mentioned that he's like one of 5 players with double-digit home runs and steals. Paul Goldschmidt, Jose Altuve, Mookie Betts, Brian Dozier. There's one other guy on the list. Can anybody guess who it is?
Keon Broxton.
Yeah, Keon Broxton. So
to be fair, Brian Dozier's at 12-9. Yasiel Puig's at 12-9. Will Myers is at 14-9. So there's a few other guys that are close.
There, of course. But I mean, those are pretty good numbers. I do think he gets traded. I think that he could be part of a package deal with Kelvin Herrera to Washington. And that would fill both their major problems if they wanted to give up kind of a big piece and maybe like a Soto or a Robles. But I do believe that the Royals will sell. They need to sell kind of some of these guys who are coming up on free agency. And I think they will at the deadline. I don't believe they're going to hang in there. So, but I love Kane for the long haul this season, especially if he gets traded, because his park situation can only get better if he does get moved.
Also one of those, not to interrupt you, but he's also one of those guys that is great at scoring runs. He always gets on base because he has excelled in walk percentage the last few years. And he's also good in batting average because he doesn't strike out too often. So his plate skills are good in regular, you know, 5x5 formats. He's great. If you play in on base percentage leagues, he's awesome. Also, if you play in points leagues, the fact that he doesn't strike out too much helps as well. So he's just a good all around fantasy asset, no matter what format.
Yeah, highest walk rate of his career right now.
And he's on a tear offensively right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the last 30 days, he's hit just as many home runs in 107 at-bats that he hit all of 2016 in 397 at-bats. So 9 home runs in 2016, 397 at-bats, 9 home runs in the last 30 days, just in 100 at-bats.
Yeah, last 7 days, he's number one on the ESPN player rater for hitters. Last 30 days, he's 12th. On the ESPN player rater for hitters. So he is definitely hot right now. Speaking of hot right now, Jose Berrios has been pitching pretty well. He's actually making my bold predictions that there would be at least one Minnesota Twins pitcher not named Ervin Santana as a top 40 pitcher coming. It looks like that might come true thanks to Jose Berrios. Matt, I know you've been a big Berrios guy for a long time, so tell me, what are your thoughts on Berrios?
Yeah, I read a couple things when he got called up about April or May, saying how he tipped his pitches last year. And that could definitely be part of the reason to explain the struggles he's had. But, I mean, since he's come up, I mean, you're looking at a guy that's been an ace. 46 innings, 45 strikeouts, only 14 walks. And the stuff is even nastier than that. I mean, you look at this guy, and Berrios is a definite surefire number two for you going forward. And and maybe even develop, take another step forward and develop into an actual ace for your fantasy team and dynasty keeper formats from going forward. But I mean, this guy's been a godsend for Minnesota. I think he's the sole reason why they are, with him and Urban Santana are as good of a 1-2 punch as anybody in the league right now. It's weird to say that. Berríos has been outstanding. The last time we brought him up on this podcast, we were talking about how there might be a little buying window, but that's long since gone. So unfortunately, if you don't have him, you're never getting him. So in a keeper dynasty, that is. And man, he's been outstanding. The stuff reminds me of Jose Fernandez, and I hate dropping comps like that, but the stuff is equivalent to that. It's outstanding.
You know how bad the Giants' season is right now? Danny Santana just hit a 3-run home run against us.
At least it wasn't Matt Adams, right, Matt?
Who's that?
My boy, that's who it is. Keith, what are your thoughts on Jose Berríos?
You know what? I'm really encouraged by what he's done this year. He was one of the top pitching prospects coming into 2016, but he just didn't perform. I mean, he never really got it together. His command wasn't very good, but that hasn't been an issue this season. He's probably one of the four or five guys that's kind of come out of nowhere, weren't drafted, really performing well, that you're most excited about. I guess those other guys could be like Robbie Ray or Luis Severino, Alex Wood, but he's in a class kind of all in his own. He's pitching really well. One of the things that I found on him that was interesting is last year, his batting average against his fastball was .339. This year so far, it's .153. So with as much as he's throwing his fastball, and he's throwing a little bit less this year than what he's done in the past, he seems to be throwing that sinker quite a bit more this season. He's thrown it more in his first 7 starts this year than he did in all 14 of his starts last year, which seems to be working out for him. I mean, you guys were talking about his slider or curveball, whatever that is, it is nasty. That thing has so much movement on it that it's almost unfair.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Berríos? You on board?
I just want to take this time to share that Cody Bellinger hit another home run while we were on air.
Oh, Jesus,
so
really? Again?
Yes, again.
This guy has no respect for podcasts.
He doesn't. He really doesn't. We could actually just talk about him every week if we want. Just have a 5-minute Cody Bellinger gush session if we
first
would like.
First major leaguer ever with 21 homers in first 51 games.
Wow.
It's unreal. It's unreal.
But now I'm going to have to write about him on FanGraphs. This just makes me sick.
It should be like that. It's always fun to write about.
I'm a Giants fan. This is not fun.
if only somebody would have picked him for NL Rookie of the Year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I mean,
it definitely wasn't me.
No, well, it wasn't any of us here. So, Mike, why don't you talk about Berríos so we can get off the Bellinger topic?
Yeah, for a little bit. I love Berríos, right? Or Berríos, whatever way. I know Berríos. I love how you put a little Berríos Latin flair to it, Matt. So yeah,
I'm a Latino. I'm a Latino at heart. No, but awesome. Seriously.
Awesome.
No, I figured out the pronunciation. I heard him on an interview, and that's how he said his name is pronounced. So I'm going to go with that. Jose Berríos.
I don't trust him.
Anyways, I like what Keith mentioned about the batting average against his fastball. And I think I also read that report about him tipping pitches last season. It was pretty apparent that, you know, Berríos was going through a bunch of rough patches in his debut last year. And the main thing has always been walks with him. And what I love is that his first pitch strike rate has went up 5 percentage points from last season. And the walks per 9 has dropped to 2.7 as well. There's still going to be groin pains. Right now, with a minimum of 40 innings pitched, he is a top 20 starter in home run rate. And I don't think that will last throughout the course of the rest of the year. And when you look at all the other underlying metrics, I think he is due for a little bit of negative regression. But at the end of the day, you know, in his small sample, he's still a top, 40-ish starter, or top 30 right now on the ESPN Player Rater. And if you kind of, you know, put that through the rest of the way, you're probably looking at more of a top 35 guy, even if he does regress a bit in home runs, but you're still going to get the strikeouts. I think that the control gains are still going to be there, and you're going to be looking at a guy that I think is going to be, is in the midst of taking a massive step forward, if you're looking at, I'm already going to look at next year, because I do think he's going to be firmly a top, at least top 40 starter, probably more of top 30, top 35 starter the rest of the way. Going into next year, I think that I would feel comfortable having him as like a top 25 to 30 starter right now, based on what I've seen, because he has such a nasty secondary offering and he's able to get double plays and get out of jams with that sinker as well. So overall, I love what I'm seeing from Barrios. And I think that you should buy him if you can. You probably can't, but I like what I'm seeing.
Right now in quality start format, he's already 37th ranked starting pitcher on ESPN. So that just shows you the value, because, I mean, what, he missed the first month of the season, right? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, he's only had seven starts to this point.
Mm-hmm, and he's already 37th.
Mike, what was your stat about his home run rate?
His home run rate is right now it's at 0.8 home runs per nine. He's top 21 in home run rate with minimum 40 innings pitched right now, because he doesn't hit the qualified mark on Fangraphs if you just filter it that way.
And his strikeouts are going to tick up, I think, too. I mean, he's slightly below a strikeout per inning. I think that number goes up.
Well, his strikeouts have always been good. The main concern was his walk rate in the minor leagues. And what I love is that his first pitch strike rate is at 60%, which is a little bit, it's about at league average, which is all you can really ask from him. If he was doing worse than we saw last year, then I'd be a little bit concerned. But his swinging strike rate has ticked up as well, which I think just goes to show that his strikeouts aren't going anywhere. He's going to be a higher than league average guy.
I was going to say, outside of one season in the minor leagues, and I mean last year at the majors when he was tipping his pitches, his walk rate in the minors has never really been bad.
No.
I mean, no, not Sean Newcomb bad, but it's had stretches in the minors where it's been a little bit worrisome, especially in the higher minors, not really in the low minors.
He's only had one time in the minor leagues where he was walking more than three guys per nine. I mean, and that was 2013.
He's never really had trouble with walks. A lot of it's been the command in the zone. But, you know, we read all the reports about Barrios tipping his pitches and stuff. I also want to point out that he did make one adjustment, too, in the interview that I heard. He said, you know, when you warm up and you throw in the bullpen, I don't know, a lot of people don't know this. The minor league balls are different than the major league balls, if you didn't know that.
One of the reasons we're having so many blister issues nowadays.
Yes, and the minor league balls have higher seams, so it's easier to throw the breaking ball. It's hard when you're going back and forth and you adjust and go to the major league ball and throw in your breaking ball. So now what Barrios did this season in all of his warm-up and when he's in the minor leagues, all of his bullpen and all of his side sessions, he used the major league baseball. And he says that he attributed that a lot because he gets more consistency in his breaking ball, because if you watch him pitch, he uses that breaking ball to set up the fastball and vice versa. Without one of those pitches, he's going to struggle because he uses the other one to set up the other one. So I think that's something that's worth know and worth study, as a lot of other pitchers come up from the minor leagues and might struggle. I mean, development is a hell of a thing to predict. It's not linear. So many variables that go in and out of each player, each mindset, each development system. I'm kind of surprised he wasn't doing that to begin with, but I think that's probably something that Minnesota might implement going forward. Who knows?
And one thing I really like that you guys are kind of bringing up, and I hadn't heard the tipping pitches thing, but as I think about it, backed up with my fastball against stat here, it makes sense that last year, if he was tipping his pitches, that his batting average against his fastball was almost 340, because the guys aren't just going to swing at the off-speed stuff. They're going to sit dead red, and they're going to crush his fastball because he's tipping the other pitches. So to me, the differential between his fastball against in 2016 and where he's having a much better effectiveness for his fastball this year, you know, supports what that claim is.
There is some regression coming, though, because, I mean, he does have a pretty minuscule BABIP right now. He's got a 230 BABIP. So I think that, if you look at his FIP and XFIP, they're markedly higher than his ERA. I don't think that they necessarily truly reflect the pitcher he's going to be rest of the way, because he's got like a 453 XFIP. And I don't think he's going to regress that far, but I would not expect him to keep doing what he's doing at the moment. I would expect the strikeouts maybe to come up a tad bit, but at the same time, I would probably expect like a mid-3s ERA. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, I'm in for that. I'm even going to go a step forward. I probably 3.3, 3.25. I think that's where I'm at with him.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy, and that is Ryan Healy. Healy was a guy that some people within the industry are really, really kind of on coming in the year, and some people did not get it whatsoever. Started off extremely slow, but has been just red hot as of late. Currently batting 284, 313, 545 with 17 home runs. Mike, what are your thoughts on Ryan Healy?
I was one of those guys that was not drafting Healy in the preseason. And, you know, I will definitely say that I was mistaken a bit here. And you know what's hilarious is he's doing a lot of this damage at home. Mm-hmm. He's hitting 331 with 12 of those 17 home runs at home, which, you know, a lot of people assume that the Athletics struggle more when they're at home hitting wise and then, you know, do better when they're on the road. But it's actually been quite reverse this season, which is pretty interesting in itself. But between him and Chris Davis, it's been pretty, pretty good in that middle of the lineup there. He is 17th in barrels per plate appearance with people with at least 50 batted ball events this year, which is telling as well. I think that his power is legit, specifically against lefties. You know, like I said, he's hitting 331 at home against lefties, or just in general at home, and 382 on the season with five home runs and 55 at bats against lefties. For the rest of the way, I think that you can expect probably close to what you've seen. He doesn't walk, and his contact percentage is at 72%, which tells me that he's not going to hit 280 the rest of the way. I would expect probably more of a 250 to 260 line, but the power is definitely legit. And, you know, based on his hard contact and the barrels stat, I think that he will probably hit another 15 bombs the rest of the way. So if you're looking for power and power alone, he's a 25-year-old righty with a lot of thump in his bat. I just don't think that the batting average is going to stay consistent the rest of the way. And playing in Oakland is certainly going to be a place where you don't score as many runs or drive in as many runs either. So just as long as you're aware of those kind of risks associated with Healy, I think that he is a fine guy to have on your team the rest of the season.
And I assume that those counting numbers are going to go down at the trading deadline as they start moving pieces around him kind of out of town. So, Keith, what are your thoughts on Ryan Healy?
Well, I definitely agree. The power potential is there. Hard hit rate is good. Exit velocity is good. Launch angle is kind of where you want to see it for a power hitter, you know, floating around the 15 or 16 angle mark. The thing that really worries me about him is he's one of those doesn't walk guys. So he is at just above 3% walk rate, and his strikeout percentage is just above 25. So it's almost a double negative. You don't really want to be above, you know, 25. The power guys are going to be above 25. You have like Sano, who's at, you know, 30 something, and you have Judge, who's at, you know, 30 something, and Gallo, who's at 100. But the lack of walks is what really scares me. You combine that with the contact rate that you've shown, I just think that's going to present a hole in his swing that's going to limit his potential. So I'm, you know, if asked buy or sell, you know, I've been selling Healy for quite some time. So power definitely legit, but I think his inability to take walks is going to prevent him from excelling real well.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Ryan Healy?
I'm with Mike here. I was kind of out on Healy preseason. I mean, he did close out 2016 with a really strong September. I believe he hit half dozen home runs or something like that, and I think that kind of left a good taste in people's mouth toward the end of the year. But I mean, he got a little lucky last year. He's not a 300 type hitter, because like he cited, the guys with the walk rate like that are never gonna hit for high average. But I think he 284, I kind of think this is what you're gonna get with this guy. I think, like, I agree with Mike again, I think this is more of the same going forward is what you can expect. We talked about him before. I kind of hinted at there might be something going on health-wise, only because before Matt Chapman came up, he was playing pretty much mostly first base. I mean, he's played a lot more third base since the Trevor Plouffe, but now with Chapman back up, it seems like he's going to be the DH again. I know he's just not a great defender, but it was kind of weird that Oakland gave up on him that quick in the field. I mean, I think a lot of that, right, Healy, and another reason why I was a little skeptical is last year he's the definition of a pop-up prospect last year. He put stuff together, and I think when a lot of people saw him on the Futures game roster last year, I think that was probably the first time they've heard of him, to be honest. I mean, I dig in deep in prospects, so I kind of knew who he was, but I didn't. I had him penciled in as just an organizational soldier kind of guy that's just around. And, I mean, he was a third-round pick, but I didn't like the plate approach, and the power was nowhere near. I mean, his career high in the minor leagues in home runs was 16, and that was in the Cal League. So, I mean, he's already surpassed that in the major leagues. And last year he was in his brief cup of coffee was well on pace to doing that as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to love. I mean, he's the type of player that the type of no walk player is the type of guy I always write off. And that's something I need to change as a fantasy analyst is I need to not write off those no walk guys as quickly as I do. But Ryan Healy's been a nice surprise for the few that stuck with him. You've been nicely rewarded. Nice little power surge. 17 home runs out of a guy you paid nothing for is pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to be known as the only guy on this podcast that was in on Ryan Healy, but I can't take much credit because, I mean, I heard about him through, like, Paul Sport and, you know, Saris. I had no idea who this guy was, you know, probably through his first month of up last year. So, you know.
And he shouldn't. And to be honest, and to be fair, there's no reason why he should have.
No, I mean, he was nothing.
And yeah, 2016 was his breakout year, and he's carried it on. So
he made a swing adjustment late in his minor league career that really kind of propelled him. And but you've got to buy in now. I know the lack of walk rate is something that kind of leaves him susceptible to prolonged cold streaks. And that's the kind of player you're going to have to deal with a guy like Ryan Healy. It's going to be months where he did what he did in April and months where he's doing what he's doing now, where he's already got 8 home runs for the month of June.
And this is something I never thought I would say. That Oakland lineup, man, has got a lot of thump. Never would have thought of that. Jed Lowry's hitting the ball, Chris Davis, Yonder, Alonso, Ryan Healy. They just called up Matt Chapman, who's a big power guy himself. Mm-hmm. Jacob Brugman's a nice little power speed option. I mean, they've got some thump on that lineup. It's interesting. They're not they still stink, but they stink because they can't pitch now. So
I mean, the question becomes, what of those pieces are still there after the trade deadline in July?
Ryan Healy should probably be the only one. And Chapman. I mean, I think they should trade Alonso.
Pender.
I think they should trade. I think they should float offers for Chris Davis, to be honest with you, and I mean, see what you can get. But
yeah, I don't know what they'll get necessarily for.
Pick
any
up
of
Matt
those
Chapman
guys.
Everywhere too, by the way, because he's going to play every day.
Yeah.
With Plouffe going down.
I said that on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. He's my kind of sleeper guy right now.
You know where Plouffe went?
Tampa Bay.
In Tampa Bay, and luckily I forgot to drop him when he got DFA'd in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Listener League, and so I still have him on my roster.
There's a lot of cold-hearted things in baseball, too, but I think one of the worst I've seen was Trevor Plouffe getting DFA'd on his birthday.
So. Oh, that's brutal.
So you can blame Billy Bean for that one. So
that's amazing, actually.
So messed up.
Well, you know what? If he hit better, he'd have a better birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. Happy birthday. Here's your walking papers.
Oh, that's messed up.
Like Carlos Pena in Moneyball. They were really...
I just watched that, actually, on my way back from Tower Wars on the plane, watching Moneyball. But anyways, let's move on and talk about Adam Wainwright, who has been up and down this season and is definitely in one of the down moments. Matt, when we talk about shitty Cardinals players, we always throw it to you first. So what is wrong with Adam Wainwright?
You got the right adjective for this guy. No, I don't know. With him, it's his fastball command. He throws the cutter, and the cutter is his primary fastball, cutter sinker. When he doesn't have that command, he can't set up the breaking ball. The breaking ball is still good, but right now it's to the point he doesn't throw hard enough to where you could sit on that pitch. If you don't, you know, you can sit on it and react. You have enough time. So he's paying for it. But when he can't locate the fastball, it's bad. And then you got a manager that leaves him in because he's the veteran, leaves him in to take the bullet when he's got 13 pitchers on staff, but he's going to let him give up 9 earned runs. Thankfully, I had a busy weekend and didn't start him in the league I have him in against Baltimore, because I probably would have, only because Baltimore has been struggling. And I know it's not a good matchup, but me and Mike kind of talked about this earlier. I mean, kind of a lot of it's luck. I would have started him, but I thankfully didn't, because he would have destroyed my ratios for the week. But it's not a whole lot to let. I mean, he's obviously going to have stretches where he's usable. He's getting teed off against righties this year, which, again, points to the lack of fastball, because breaking balls are neutralized and lefties are a little better than they were last year. But righties are destroying him, and that's a weird thing for a guy like this, because he thrives on the command and stuff, but on the road, he's a must-sit for me also, just because the splits are horrendous. But it's a weird season, and he's probably dropped in most formats right now. But he's a guy – I'm starting him at home against Pittsburgh next week, or this week. I'm going to start him at home. But if he doesn't do well there, I might be cutting him. And it's hard for me to say because, I mean, he was one of my favorite pitchers, but he's just collecting checks at this point.
Good for him on that count.
Yeah, hey, someone's got to do it.
Keith, what are your thoughts on Adam Wainwright?
Well, I don't have a whole lot of opinion on Wainwright. I haven't been in on him, you know, since probably the beginning of last year, you know, the struggles that he's had. You know, it's one of those things where in his age 35 season, I really don't expect a lot of wholesale changes. And it just may be a situation, you guys probably know better than me, but where he just might be on the decline of his career. I mean, if you want to look at a silver lining, I think his FIP is a little bit lower than what his ERA is. But still, his ERA is 5.75 and his FIP is 4.26. Neither of those is very good.
He's been a little unlucky on the fly balls, but I mean, it's the fastball command, 100%. From watching every start this year with him, mostly it's the fastball command because you can't set up the curveball, and if you can't set the curveball up, you can spit on it. So,
Mike, what are your thoughts on Wainwright?
Yeah, even with a start in Colorado in which he went 7 innings, struck out 6 guys, and you know had one walk, only gave up 3 hits, his ERA on the road is 9.48. So, like, that gives you a little bit of perspective. So in DFS, if you're ever, you know, looking at hitters, definitely play the guys opposing Adam Wainwright on the road. But I think for the year, just based on the fact that starting pitching is so bad, it's so bad, and he is, once again, like this month alone, he has a 2.2 home run per nine, 31% home run to fly ball rate. I'm not saying that he's going to improve to the point where you can start him every day or every time he's on the mound, but I do think he is pitching at least a full run higher than he should be. Like last year, in a horrendous season, he had a 4.62 ERA, borderline unusable. The 1.4 whip was definitely unusable. But if you pick the right matchups, there were definitely times where you could play him and feel a little bit confident about it. And I think that we're kind of at that point now with him. Yes, to answer your question, Keith, he's definitely on the decline. He's 35 years old. His stuff isn't nearly as good, but his curveball still gets above average whiffs on it. And I do think that he's going to end up with an ERA around 4.6 as opposed to sitting at 5.75, which it is right now. So going forward, if you are a Wainwright guy, you're probably going to be owning him in very deeper leagues. So like probably 15 teams or deeper. And if you're in that scenario, then I would pick your spots. I would say definitely at home, and I would say that the Colorado start on the road was the biggest fluke you'll ever see, but at least right now he's not going to be as bad as he's been. I mean, the last 3 starts he's been absolutely horrendous overall, and I just don't see him giving up 20 earned runs over you know 9 or 10 innings pitched like he has the last 3 starts. So it's going to get a little bit better, but this isn't a situation where you're trading for him or anything like that, because if you're playing him, you're in a deeper format anyways, and it's easy to attain somebody like Wainwright. So it's kind of is what it is, but he's not this bad.
Yeah, I think he is kind of this bad. I think this is kind of the end. I mean, the cutter hasn't been as good. I mean, he's got negative pitch values on it this year, as opposed to even last year when he struggled. He at least had a positive pitch value there. I mean, the shocking thing is he's not really giving up home runs, you know, which is, you know, I guess the best. But I mean, it's highest walk rate of his career, or at least since 2005. I don't see much. The Cardinals aren't great this year, so he's not going to always get a ton of run support. I don't see why you would be holding on to him in any format outside of NL only.
You want to hear a crazy stat?
Of course I do.
It's not Adam Wainwright. It's not Adam Wainwright related, but it's baseball as a whole. Major League Baseball in 2017 has a 50% higher home run rate than the Cal League and the PCL did in 2016.
Wow.
If that doesn't say something about the baseballs, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it does, because obviously the baseballs are different.
I think everybody's just on steroids.
Yeah.
You know? I was just kidding.
I just thought that was an interesting stat, because that's what it makes it so, as if predicting performance for prospects and minor league guys wasn't difficult enough. Now you got to add in a completely different baseball and different run scoring environment on top of everything. So.
All right, let's move on and talk about a guy who's been surprisingly good as of late. That's Mike Fiers, who's been on a little bit of a roll, has a nice schedule coming up with 2 starts against Oakland. Mike, what are your thoughts on Mike Fiers? Is he a guy to pick up?
for now, I suppose, if you need him for a short amount of time, but you still have a lot of guys coming back from Houston, and Fires is somebody that has pitched in the bullpen sometimes relatively well. And I don't think that this is something that you can count on long term. I don't think I'm breaking any news by saying that. He had to have pretty much solid, the last three starts have been really, really good for him. And for him to drop his home run to fly or home run rate down to 2.2 or 2.3 for the season, it had to go with him having four straight starts without giving up a home run. He's still in the bottom six in the whole league in home run rate. And he's just somebody that's always given up home runs, at least more specifically in the last couple of years here. So I think that for now he's worthy of being on your team to stream for the next probably three or four starts that he has. But like I said, there are going to be reinforcements coming for Houston. They do have a comfortable lead here in the division, it looks like. So while I think that they need those reinforcements to come back for Houston, they probably can give Fires a little bit more time and give those guys that are on the DL a little bit more time to recover as well. But I would say at the most, maybe give him a month on your team in deeper formats, not in shallower formats, because he does have a couple of really nice offerings. The changeup and the curveball specifically are pretty decent pitches for him. And he's always been somebody that struck out guys at a pretty decent clip. But like I said, I think that this is something that is just a short-term thing. I think he will continue to give up home runs. And when those starts happen, it's going to end up crushing your team a bit. For the year, Baseball HQ does a PQ, pure quality starts, dominance, and disaster ratio. And for the year, he has an 8% dominance and 38% disaster rate, which means that almost 40% of the time that he comes out and you start him, he is crushing your team in ratios and stats. So that's just a little bit of a warning for you.
Keith, are you picking up Fires?
I'm definitely not. He's pitched really well like the past 15 or 30 days. I mean, look at his line the last 15 days. He's got almost 20 innings, a whip below one, an ERA just barely over 1.5. He's not striking out nearly as many as you want to see in about 7.45. So his strikeouts aren't really there from what you want to see from somebody that's got a sub one whip. What I'm trying to figure out is how in the world does he have an ERA of 4 while giving up 18 home runs on the season? And I guess the answer to that is his FIP. It's much higher than what his ERA is. So his FIP is 5.78, a 1.5% differential between his 4 ERA. My feeling is just that. I think he has a 40% potential of absolutely blowing up your team anytime he comes in. And I know he's had a really good stretch, but that really hasn't changed my overall opinion of what Mike Fiers is.
Matt, has it changed your opinion of Mike Fiers?
Not as a whole, but I do think you have to continue to ride this. With as bad as starting pitching has been, injury-wise and as inconsistently-wise, if you can find someone that's put together two or three good starts like Fiers, I mean, you kind of have to no choice but to use them until he implodes, unfortunately. And that's kind of the situation I find myself in. I don't own Fiers personally, but, I mean, he might be a guy I might be looking to add if he's available for the next start. He's headed against Oakland, I believe, right, his next start? So that's a
next two starts here. That's a
decent matchup, but I am
worried about
his fly ball tendency. It's not, because it's his fly ball tendency, and he's given up home runs kind of like crazy this year, Fiers. So that might actually not be the best play as you would think. So good call on that, Mike. But the thing with Fiers, he's kind of got the same skill set as Marco Estrada, but he's not nearly as good at preventing home runs and all that stuff like that. But like Mike said, the changeup and curveball he relies on doesn't have the premium velocity, but he kind of gets strikeouts and kind of a little crafty guy that gets it down a little over the top delivery and stuff like that. But I think you have to ride it, and you have to be prepared that he might blow up on you. But I'm not afraid to pick up Fiers for this next start, but hopefully it doesn't kill me.
Yeah, I picked up Fiers in a shallow AL only league that Mike and I are both in. Because pretty much all my pitchers are on the DL at the moment, and I'm trying to compete to win that league. So I'm hoping he can keep it together for the next start. He has yet to give up a home run in the month of June, which is something that's a little bit encouraging. But at the same time, he's got a pretty high strand rate right now that is probably going to come down. I don't think he'll be able to keep balls in the park long term. But, you know, two starts against Oakland, who've got some swing and miss to their game. You know, as long as he can kind of, you know, work his way around some of the power bats that we've been talking about throughout this episode, I think he can at least rack up some strikeouts in those games if he doesn't get crushed by the long ball early on. So I'd use him in the short term, but I don't think, you know, once Keuchel and McCullers come back, I think Mike's right. I think he ends up in the bullpen.
When he's in the bullpen, he'll come in and put out some fires, right?
Oh, boy.
Boo. Let's talk about Logan Forsythe, who is like a guy I was really on coming into the season. And I have been taking my lumps with him all season long. Keith, what are your thoughts on Logan Forsythe? Can he turn it around?
Well, the question I have with Logan Forsythe is what his value is in terms of other second base, middle infield guys in the league. So if you look at what skills he brings to the table, he's not an elite power guy. He's not going to steal you very many bases. And in this landscape, as far as middle infield, where almost every guy is going to give you 20-plus home runs, and a lot of them are going to give you double-digit steals throughout the length of a season, I question what his value is in compared to everybody else. It's not so much for me a Logan Forsythe thing as it is I want other guys more than I want him.
Mike, you're a huge Rays guy. You've been a Logan Forsythe guy in the past. Are you still in on him, or are you bailing?
For right now, I'm bailing. Since he came back from the disabled list from a toe injury on May 23rd, he's hitting 141 with a 190 BABIP, mind you, with 282, 239. A lot different than Joe Adell's slash line, if you guys remember from last week's show. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, a little bit.
The only place to go is up, right? So I'm not going to say that he's going to maintain this type of production the rest of the way. But Forsythe has had problems with staying durable in the past. But at the same time, he is somebody that you can play against lefties. In a very minimal amount of time, he's crushed lefties this year, 30 at-bats, 355 batting average. And he's done that for the majority of his career. So, you know, really, I think that it's worth speculating on him. If you are in just dire need of a middle infielder, then yeah, go grab Forsythe, because I do think he will hit first against lefties and then probably in the 6th, 7th range against righties. And if he can, you know, maintain a little bit of durability as the season goes on, then he is somebody that has the batted ball profile to hit, you know, double digit home run pace. It won't be necessarily double digit home runs the rest of the way, although I could see it on a very good Dodgers team, you know, a team that has scored a lot of runs this year. Mind you, Cody Bellinger might just drive them all in before he gets up, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But I think that I would definitely pick him up in deeper formats if I was in need at middle infield. No, he isn't a difference maker anywhere, but he's definitely not this bad. I think right now he's just kind of going through an injury period, and hopefully over time he can get himself healthy for a little bit of a stretch run here. I think he might be the type of guy that for a month later on this season does really well for you and can really spark your team. But in the remaining time, or the time that it takes for you to get there, you're going to be kind of going through some lumps. So,
Matt, what are your thoughts on Forsythe?
I'm kind of discouraged. The hip injury, the toe injury, whatever injury it is, he's striking out over 30% clip now, which is far and away a career high. He's still walking at 14%, which is kind of saving his OBP. It's still got a 331 OBP despite hitting 200, which is actually kind of incredible for how bad of a hitter he's been this year. 278 slug, not good. I'm just worried about the power is gone. I wasn't really a big fan on Forsythe going into the season, only because he doesn't offer anything in the steals department. But the 20 home run pop that he did provide last year was nice. But again, that's pretty much the only season he's had two seasons in his career where he's gotten over 550 plate appearances, and he had 17 and 20 home runs in both of those seasons with Tampa. So, I mean, you can expect to get around 15, 20 home runs, but something's up this year, and it might be a little more than just the hip and the toe, because, I mean, he's getting sporadic off days all the time, and he's not hitting the ball. They're still playing Chase Utley a lot. Maybe he's kind of feeding into his routine. Let him, you know, he covered third base with Turner being out. They moved him around a lot. But yeah, he's an option. I think he might bounce back a little bit, but he's not going to be on my team, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's going to end up on a couple of my teams, because I was big on Forsythe coming into the season. You know, the hard part is the Dodgers have started platooning him a little bit more, and he's getting the short end of that platoon, which is not a good sign. But I mean, how do we expect that Chase Utley is going to be leading off?
They haven't benched him yet. I mean,
yeah, Utley, that's got to stop, though. I mean, if they want to compete in this division, You know, Utley can't be leading off for him. And Forsyth, in spite of the fact that he hasn't hit the ball well, he's still walking, you know, 14% of the time this year. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's just been nicked up. You know, he may not return the value you were hoping for on draft day, but if you remember, he was going extremely late. So it's not like you had to pay much for him. I think that, you know, he's swinging less outside of the zone. He's, you know, still making decent contact. I think this is a matter of time before it turns itself around. And I'm going to continue to roster him in the leagues that I've got him in. So, all right, let's talk about Ivan Nova, who has been pretty fantastic for the most part this season. The only problem is it coming with no strikeouts, like, whatsoever. Yeah. So, Matt, how valuable is Ivan Nova?
He's one of the guys I targeted this season, preseason, and I'm happy that I ended up getting him. He's, you know, we always talk about guys that will supply you with strikeouts and home runs, RBIs, and steals and stuff, but one category that never gets talked about is whip, and he's a whip guy. 1.02 whip right now on the season is fantastic, especially for a starting pitcher. And, I mean, you mentioned the lack of strikeouts. His 13.7% strikeout rate is 79th out of 84 qualified starters. So he's only walking nine. He's walked nine guys in 96 innings. So that more than mitigates it. I mean, Pittsburgh's not scoring a lot of runs, but I play mostly quality start formats, and he's just continuously knocking out quality starts. He's on a very impressive streak with that right now, and pretty much he's been a rock for me in two of my leagues that I own him in. It's been great because my starting pitching's been a little bit volatile. I've had guys like McCullers go on the DL, and not that nobody's going to help me with the strikeouts, but you know, he does provide nice safety there. I can pick up some relievers and kind of plug some middle relievers and set up guys in with Nova and kind of make up for the lack of strikeouts, I guess, in a weird way. So that's definitely a tactic to use, but it'll be fun. But the strikeout rate, man, is almost borderline unusable. But he makes up for it with being stingy with the walks.
Mike, are you using Ivan Nova?
Sell him. And I love Nova, right? Because I have him in multiple spots.
Before you like get rolling on your diatribe, what could you sell him for? I mean, like, no one's buying Ivan Nova.
He's a whip asset. That's it.
Let me tell you what you can sell him for.
All right.
Hold, please. Do you want to talk other pitchers or just in general? Because, like,
give me anything. Because I don't think you're getting. Don't get me wrong.
Gregory Polanco?
No one's doing that.
All right. Andrin Ciarte?
Ciarte for me, but I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
I would take Ciarte. Let's see who else has been doing insanely bad. Maybe Justin Upton.
No, you're not getting Justin Upton for.
No?
No, there's no way you're getting Justin Upton for Ivan Nova.
Well, maybe you can add him as a piece in a trade, like a 2-for-2 or something. I don't know. Like, I'm not trading him for like Ivysel Garcia or something, but I think that you can easily trade. Why do you think that there's no market for Ivan Nova? Like, I've actually gotten multiple trade offers for Nova and I've declined them.
What have you gotten?
What about Jeff Samardzija?
I would
take him all day, but I mean, in a certain league,
I think that's something I think you could get away with, maybe.
I would love that trade to sell Nova and his lack of strikeouts. I think Jeff Samardzija is extremely underrated coming into this year. I think he's third overall in strikeouts minus walk percentage, right below, I think, Kershaw and Scherzer.
My question for you guys is, why in the hell would the Samardzija owner do that?
Well, if you look at the ownership across the leagues, I think Samardzija is owned in less leagues than what, you know,
I'll tell you in a second.
Samardzija's not walking too many guys either. And I mean, and then you look at
Samardzija's owned in 10% less leagues.
Strikeouts.
Yeah. So I think in certain leagues, I think you can sell that.
Drew Pomeranz. I would trade him for Drew Pomeranz. And I think that's easily attainable. Jeff Hoffman. I think you can easily do that. Yep. If the John Gray owner is sick of not having him, I would do that. You can probably do something in the vicinity of Jordan Montgomery, Sean Manaea. I would take any of them.
Definitely.
I think that there's a lot of avenues that you can go, especially in the starting pitcher realm. But regardless, I mean, I'll keep it short and sweet with Nova. As he goes through the lineup more, his swing and strike percentage, like you kind of mentioned earlier, Matt, is below guys like Bronson Arroyo, Ubaldo Jimenez, you know, just to name a few.
Like that.
Yeah, just to name a few. But you know, as he goes through the order, the first two times through, 1.29 ERA, 1.95 ERA. The second, the third and fourth times through, 5.4 and 9.82. So obviously his lack of swing and miss is going to hurt him in the long run. And he's gotten pretty lucky in the home run rate. I think over the course of the last 3 years, he's been somebody that has steadily given up more home runs. Yes, he pitches in a better ballpark now, but based on the fact that he is literally walking nobody, there's no way that this continues. A 0.8, he has the second best walk percentage in the major leagues. I don't think that that's going to continue. There's just a lot of right now his expected ERA is 3.9. His actual ERA is 2.9. He's a top 14, excuse me, starting pitcher on the ESPN player rater. I bought him as a guy that maybe could end up as a top 40 guy. So I think he's going to slide immensely the rest of the way. And I am willing to try and capitalize on that. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a whole, you know, an obvious buy low, sell high situation. But even if it's a guy that, you know, like Jordan Montgomery, who I think is really quality and will be quality the rest of the way, or just other guys that might give you strikeout upside, the whip thing is all fine and good, but I don't think that he's going to be this good in his walk rate the rest of the way, even though his first pitch strike rate is by far the best it's ever been in his career. I don't see that continuing. And you can't, well, as good as he's doing in whip, you are losing that in the strikeout rate. The 5.1 strikeout per nine is literally losing you points in roto formats. You can't have that.
See, I have him in head-to-head, so it mitigates the risk a little bit for me there. One league is roto, one's head-to-head. But, I mean, with the way the pitching landscape is now, 10 of his last 12 starts are quality. And the one that is the two that aren't are 6 innings, 4 runs, and 8 and 1/3 innings, 4 earned runs. I mean, they didn't come with – the one had one strikeout in the 8-inning game, and the six-inning game had 5. But, I mean, the relative safety with the landscape of pitching right now, I don't think he's a guy you're dealing. I mean, yeah, you're not happy with the strikeouts, but I have luckily on one of my teams with him, I have Andrew Miller, kind of mitigates some of the loss there because Miller gets 3 strikeouts.
It's not just the pitches. It's not just the strikeouts though. It's also the fact that his home run rate will regress further as the season goes on.
What do you think his zone contact percentage is?
Probably 75-80%.
92.8%.
Yeah, see, I guess 93. Yeah, close. Yeah.
I mean, and he's throwing in the zone more often this year, almost 6% more.
What's his BABIP against? Probably very low. Probably 270, 260.
All right, so that's what I'll jump in right there because that's what I was going to say. He's a career 304 BABIP against guy. Last year it was 309. With as many balls as he's putting in play, with his lack of strikeouts, I mean, his BABIP this year is 263.
Here's the thing with that, though.
There's some regression coming to the amount of balls that he puts in play. I mean, the walks are great, but there's some regression coming as far as the BABIP.
The thing with that is Pittsburgh leads the league in shifts almost every year. I don't know if I don't have the data in front of me for this year, but, I mean, they're obviously doing – Clint Hurdle is great at that. Whoever is in charge of that, all their pitchers have a little bit lower BABIPs than the league.
Clint Hurdle's not great at anything.
I think he's a pretty good manager. Maybe not this year, but –
but you already got your value out of Nova is kind of what I'm saying. If you draft him,
definitely.
You already got your value out of
not
him.
Wrong there.
And I would look for guys that you really feel confident in for the second half of the season. That if you're like way low, if you say you're like ninth in a 12-team league and you need somebody that you're going to go big or go home on, why not trade somebody like Nova and go big or go home? It doesn't have to be even somebody that is really established right now. Even if everybody's like, oh, I hate Nova. Go for somebody that can just – blow you out of the water with it. Maybe somebody like Chance Adams, if you feel that good about him or whatever, just somebody that you take risk on.
It's possible that we're undervaluing, maybe, me and not you, Mike, maybe I'm undervaluing what his value would be on the trade market. Cause I mean, he has been fantastic. And like you said, he's been a top 15 pitcher on the ESPN player rater. I just personally, I wouldn't trade for him. So maybe that's kind of clouding my vision of him.
I think he's been a rock for me, so I wouldn't trade him either. It's kind of
if weird. You can get some Arger for him right now, I think that's a no-brainer.
I would do that. Yeah, I would
no-brainer.
Do that. I just don't see why the Samardzija owner would take the downgrade in strikeouts. I don't get that.
Yeah, Alex Wood. If somebody would give me Alex Wood for Nova, I would do that in a second.
Me love Alex Wood.
I love me some Alex Wood.
Wood, huh?
Yeah. Let's talk about Mike Zunino before we wrap it up. For this episode, he has been on fire, widely available. Mike, are you buying Mike Zunino?
Abso-fucking-lutely I am. Over the last month, he is the look. Let me see. I think he is the second best or third best catcher on the ESPN Player Rater. Let's see. Since he's come back, also on May 23rd, very synonymous with Mr. Logan Forsyth, he has 7 home runs and is hitting .325. Yes, that comes with a 40% strikeout rate, and he's always been somebody that's going to strike out. But in this landscape of catchers, why not at this point? I mean, I feel like he is going to offer power, and he has consistently offered power when he's been on the field. I just think that if you're looking for somebody to give you some power from the catching position, why not? You can always drop him and go out and get another guy. That's the way the position has been for this season. But I'm buying Zunino because I was buying him before the season started. And the fact that he's been a pleasant surprise since he's come back from the minor leagues since getting demoted tells me a lot. Yes, that's all been inflated numbers since he's come back. It's, you know, almost a 490 BABIP, and everything across the board is inflated. But at the end of the day, he is a very good power hitter, and at the catcher position, if you need power, I think that he's the way to go.
Keith, are you buying Mike Zunino?
I am. I'm buying Zunino as much as I'm buying, you know, most of the catchers, which I think are somewhat replaceable. I mean, I don't know why anybody in today's catcher landscape would invest too heavily in any catchers, and that includes the guys at the top.
Because, you know, Buster Posey is leading the league in on-base percentage and average?
I get that, but again, I'm spending my money other places other than at catcher, and part of it's because the rest of the landscape is so bad that I don't feel like spending your money there is going to give you that much of an advantage across the game. I think that one guy is going to have an advantage at catcher, but it's going to leave him a hole at some other position. I'm going to wait until the very end of my drafts. I'm going to swap out guys right and left because guys are going to go on tears like Mike Zunino and hit 7 home runs in 77 at-bats, and then a week later, it's going to be another guy. So I'm swapping these guys out pretty quickly in my standard leagues.
I think it depends on the format, too, because like you said, in a standard league, if you're in a 12-team, one-catcher league, yeah, then that's a strategy. You ignore catcher. And then just play the field, because if you did that, you'd probably have Alex Avila on your team, who's been the top 5 catcher on the ESPN Player Rater. However, ridiculous. In 2 catcher leagues or deeper formats, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff written on multiple sites, including Baseball HQ, FanGraphs, about the negative impact in 2 catcher leagues of rostering crappy catchers, especially if you start talking about AL only, NL only, or 15-team mixed. I think you have to be willing to invest a little bit more in catcher. And if you paid the price on Buster Posey, one of the guys that I bought earlier this year and felt like he was underrated in 2 catcher formats, you're making a lot of profit right now. But in terms of Mike Zunino, I think you guys are right. I'm riding the hot streak. I think he could fall off at any moment because he is striking out like 40% of the time. But for right now, you're getting your money's worth, which is literally nothing in the majority of formats. Matt, are you buying Zunino?
You guys nailed it. Just ride the hot streak. It's not sustainable. 40% strikeout rate, nobody can survive at that level. You're getting the power. It's nice. And as far as investing in catching goes, how happy are you right now if you have Jonathan Lucroy? I mean, he was consensus top 4 catcher this year behind
or Wilson Contreras.
I mean, Contreras is still providing top 10 value at the position, but barely. But, I mean, Lucroy is hitting .269 with 4 homers and 18 RBIs. I mean, rest of the season, if you have to roster one, it's Zunino or Lucroy. You're taking Lucroy still, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's not a groundbreaking thing. Because
I'm probably trading Lucroy and then picking up one of these other guys. If he has any sort of value whatsoever, I'm going to get that value out of him, pair him with somebody else, and then pick up somebody else off waivers, because I guess that kind of goes into my strategy of, you know, the no-catcher strategy. But I just, you know, he's overwhelmingly owned in most leagues,
yeah.
And I'm looking to trade him and then pick up one of these other guys and just continue to rotate him.
I just want to echo what Justin said, though. I cannot agree with that more. The one-catcher league, you have to invest in catcher somewhat. Don't be the last guy to pick a catcher. One catcher league, you don't have to, but two catcher formats, you have to invest in catcher because you don't want to get stuck with 2 piles of crap because then you're put you behind the 8-ball pretty quickly. So I think he's 100% right there. But, I mean, look at the catcher rankings right now. Our staff league, which is OBP, Tyler Flowers is in the top 10 for catchers. Manny Pena is in the top half of the league. Yasmani Grandal is down at 17th. Luke Roy's at 32nd. Like, it's just a wasteland still. Well, it's better than it was last year, but it's...
This is why I hate doing catcher ranks at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it's because it's so terrible.
And it's so league-specific. Like, it's really bad, but it's super league-specific. And if you look at the player rater for different leagues, like you're mentioning, you're going to see guys moved all around the place. So it's really hard to even talk about catcher value in terms of where you rank guys versus other guys, because every format changes every guy's long-term value. So it's a really difficult thing to do within the industry. And why a lot of analysts hate catchers.
I think the no-catcher thing came from that, huh? It's just because you don't want to rank them?
It might. I mean, I would understand it.
No, it's frustrating.
I mean, guys right now in the top 12 for the season on the ESPN Player Radar, again, that is aimed at 12-team one-catcher leagues. So guys in the top 12, Austin Hedges, Manny Pena, Tyler Flowers, Alex Avila. I mean, those are guys... You know, even Yadier Molina, who was a guy that I think a lot of people really dismissed coming into the year. If you're in a one-catcher league, even if it's 15 teams, there's no reason to spend on a catcher.
Nope.
All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Keith, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks guys for having me.
Definitely. Why don't you tell people again where you can be reached on social media, because you're definitely an active guy on Twitter. So definitely people give him a follow and interact with him, because he answers questions unlike some other people within the industry. So definitely hit Keith up on Twitter. Tell us where you reach on Twitter, and then where we can see and hear your work.
All right, guys. I'm at @fantasy_Keith. Definitely send the questions to me. Like Justin said, I don't mind answering questions. Love talking baseball. I do some writing over at fanfrontofficepodcast.com. I'm doing some player profiles and digging in pretty deep on some of those guys. So definitely check it out.
Matt, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
I want to second what Keith said about his hitter profiles are great. I look at those when they come up. They're always in depth, puts everything every hitter's done, kind of gets it's exactly that. It provides you with how they're doing, what they're doing, and it's always entertaining. MD Tomp FWFB, updating the prospect list with draft picks, have them all done, now just making, have all the team lists individually done, now just putting them together into one gigantic list, and it's a pain in my rear end now because I don't know what to do with Gleyber Torres. Just kidding, he's not going anywhere. But it's a sad news on Torres, but other than that, just hit me up. I like to talk ball, get a lot of questions on Twitter, and just in awe of Cody Bellinger every day.
Mike, where can you be reached? What are you working on?
Yeah, you can reach me on the Cody Bellinger fan club page. My username is SuckCodyRaw @whatever.
Oh, God.
Yeah, reach me on Twitter @MikeWarnerFWFB. Check out the prospect show. We just had Ralph Lifshitz on last week.
Listened to it last night. Fantastic episode, guys.
Yeah, we talked draft, so it was awesome. Andy wasn't there last week, but we will try and make it a little bit more regular than it's been, which was once every... a couple months, the last couple
months. I wonder
who we
can blame for that.
Yeah, had a lot of schedules, but it's looking like the column is coming a bit. But yeah, check that out. Check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. Check out anything else I write on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. And yeah, that's about it.
All right. You can reach me on Twitter @JustinMasonFWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work over on Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week. Actually, this time I'm going to write 7 articles this week over at Fangraphs, because I'm covering for Paul Sporer on the weekend shift of the Roto Write-Up. So a lot of articles over there. I'm going to have some more stuff up on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. All our football ranks just went up, so you can definitely check all that out. Then you can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. And then I may have another announcement coming up about another place I'm going to be working here soon. So extremely busy, but definitely hit me up with questions on Twitter or join our Facebook discussion group, Facebook/ Friends Fantasy Benefits, I think it is. So definitely check that out. Give us a rate and review. If you do and you leave us a 5-star review, that will get you entered in to win some free gear from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, including T-shirts, I got some rec room gear, some other stuff we're going to be giving away. And I think coming up probably in a few months, I'm going to give away something really, really, really cool. But that's just a little teaser. So, yeah, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Keith, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
Oh, Cody Bellinger. I love you, Cody Bellinger.
AJ Pollock leaves his rehab with a quad.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I'm glad I didn't hit stop recording.